You're listening to the AHTB Cereals and Oilseeds podcast. Monthly highlights from your arable levy organisation.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the AHTB Cereals and Oilseeds podcast. I'm Judith Stafford and I'm the Knowledge Exchange Manager for the North. This month's episode comes from our recent Grain Market Outlook conference. It's all focused on how our industry can get ready for the challenges of a post-Brexit marketplace. We have snippets from Jack Watts and Amandeep Kaur Purawal's presentations on the grain and oilseeds markets, as well as AHDB's latest Horizon document. This recent report sets out the potential impact of three different post-Brexit scenarios for agriculture. We'll start though with Paul Temple. Paul farms in East Yorkshire and is AHDB Cereals and Oilseeds Chair. He opened the conference with his thoughts on Brexit success.
Brexit, 17 months and counting. And I'm hugely aware that the wheat that I'm putting in the ground now, that we'll harvest next year, will be part of this whole new world of a post-Brexit market. I don't count on knowing the detail. That's reasonably evident for every time we turn our television on. But we can gain constantly a sense of the direction of travel. I find myself having to stay calm on occasions when I hear farmers thinking that Brexit is good because the price of wheat's gone up and their subsidy is going to be higher. You know, it has to me the similarity of the drawback of an ocean on a beach before a tsunami with a view of wonder before that great big wave crashes over us. We have to find what I call the high watermark. Now, at the moment, the UK occupies, I think, a reasonably unique market position globally. Cereal-wise, we've got weak currency, low levels of stock and carryover, we've got import parity, bits of selling and buying resistance. It's different in many ways to the global position. And particularly, I'm aware of Russia now playing that key global supply role in wheat and seemingly capable of producing more wheat every year. That is the competition I will be facing. Now, it is really easy to simply feel lost and inclined to literally just sit back and wait and see. But I would suggest for all of us in an industry, the growing cycle is too long. The margins that you're operating in are too low. The capital involved too high to literally just sit back. Brexit success will be about managing and facing change. It will be about the better links into the supply chain with the customer's needs in sight, and most definitely about being competitive. So we are part of an exciting period of history, and there's a huge amount to be learned from literally listening to people across the industry. And I think for those with the young, adaptable mind, they are really well placed to ride this wave of change. They haven't the sense of fear that I might have, and their skills and ambition will be in demand regardless of what actually happens. This harvest has proved to me timely reminder that you have to plan for the worst, as the best really isn't a problem. My view of Brexit is remarkably similar. If I can work out my worst case scenario, I can plan, I can change, I can adapt. If I leave it to the last minute, my options decline.
So, what does Brexit mean for farmers? I let Phil Bicknell explain.
I'm Phil Bicknell. I'm the Market Intelligence Director here at AHDB. In the industry, I used to work for the National Farmers Union, was head of food and farming there for a while, was chief economist, have worked in the industry for the best part of 20 years in different roles. US Department of Agriculture is on the CV. Also grew up on a family farm in Warwickshire, so kind of hands-on at weekends in terms of the farming aspect, still on the family farm. One of the key things when I start thinking about Brexit and what it means for farmers is just how everything is really complex and really difficult. There's lots of things that could change, particularly around farm policy, particularly around our trade relationships. We have big question marks over the availability of labour, not just on farms, but also in our wider food supply chain. And I suppose one thing that I start scratching my head about is, well, what does all that mean for individual farming businesses? I get it, it's really difficult and really complex to unpick it, but I suppose one of the things that we've been trying to do from AHDB is trying to break it down and focus on some of those complex issues and hopefully try and make them a bit more tangible, a bit more accessible. And ultimately, try and ask farmers just that, you know, the what if question. What if farm policy changed? What would it mean for you? What if labour costs went up? What would it mean for you? One of the key things is we've been travelling around the country talking to farmers as around our latest Horizon report, which is basically it's an impact assessment looking at what the Brexit impact could be on different farming sectors. So I suppose the key thing we've encouraged there is just to start farmers thinking a bit more about, well, what is my reliance on the basic payment? What proportion of my farm revenue or my profitability is that? What about the product I produce? As the UK, are we an exporter of it or do we import lots of it? Because those different dynamics could change quite considerably depending on whether we get a deal or not with Europe, and the approach that UK government might take towards trade relationships with the rest of the world in future.
Next up, here's AHDB lead analyst Jack Watts on the opportunities and challenges within the grain market.
We're on a journey towards Brexit. The crop going in the ground now faces a marketing period which will partly occur in a post-Brexit world if we go along with the current timelines. The resilience of the industry to Brexit in the short term will largely depend on prices, and we're starting to see, we've got good visibility of the forward prices. Essentially, the NOV18 price you can see evolving is stronger than it's been in reasonable years, but if we look back further than that, it certainly isn't setting any record levels. And so the price will play a huge role in determining how quickly we see the impact of Brexit on the industry. One of the key other areas to think about is how different types of tariffs will be implemented. At the moment, we have, from an EU point of view, we have variable rate tariffs in place, primarily on high quality milling wheat and also on maize as well. They haven't largely been in play for many years, more importantly coming into play in the last few months, particularly on maize. And the question is how, if the UK will replicate these to emulate what's already happening in the European marketplace. Appreciate there's a huge amount of analysis that's just come out that way. I think the key thing is really to sum up the threats and opportunities. I think from an opportunities point of view, I think there is that opportunity for import substitution, not necessarily on grain directly, because we know farmers will always find weather conditions challenging to hit the precise spec that the consumers need. But I think we have to think about the sector in the broader terms of agri-food and how are we going to add value to our surpluses. Do we want to continue slogging our guts out to try and be a commodity producer, high volume, low value export, or can we use surpluses more smarter to integrate more with our livestock industries, more with our food processing industries to actually create higher value? To me, a post-Brexit world looks like high value, looks like a value game rather than a volume game, because we know that it's going to be really challenging for us to do that as well. The key opportunity for me, as I see it, is probably the opportunity to redefine our agri-food systems and create one of the most sustainable food industries in the world. That's not ideology, that's a necessity, as I see it, for an industry to survive there as well.
Jack's whole presentation is on the website. That's cereals.ahdb.org.uk. It's very thorough, and I'd really recommend watching it to understand the possible situation in more detail. Rapeseed crops going in the ground this autumn will be marketed in the 2018-19 crop year, which will make it, if you like, the first Brexit rapeseed crop. Amandeep Kaur Puriwal explains more about the global oilseeds rollercoaster and its impact on UK rapeseed.
Now, there's signals from the global market that suggest we'd like to have a higher UK rapeseed area this year. And weather permitting, flea beetle permitting, yields permitting, we should have an exportable surplus in 18-19. But there's a key threat looming over our major export market, and I'm not talking about Brexit here. It's the uncertainty looming over biodiesel production in the EU. That could have real knock-on effects for our UK rapeseed. If we then throw in Brexit into the mix, then we could see that effects amplified. There may not be any tariffs on the rapeseed, but you could get indirect effects from the tariffs on rapeseed oil. On top of that, you've got non-tariff barriers to consider as well. So there's many challenges and obstacles to look at. I think, though, there's a common thread through all of these key points. Normally, when we're looking at commodity forecasts, be it for grains or be it for oilseeds, the weather is the major source of uncertainty. And that hasn't changed. That's still going to be the case. But recently, there's been a new element of uncertainty that's been increasing in importance, even you could say for cabbage stem flea beetle in the first point, and that's policy. Though perhaps we're in a better position to control policy than we are the weather.
As I said earlier, AHDB recently launched a new Horizon report looking at the possible impact of some post-Brexit scenarios. Sarah Baker explains more.
at AHDB, we've written thousands, tens of thousands of words about Brexit over the last year that we've published as part of our Horizon series. But with this report, we've gone a step further. We've worked with AgriCAES Consulting to frame the question, what does change look like? We're here to sketch out as wide a possible landing zone, and this conversation will evolve, I think, as more information becomes available. It's not a forecast of what will happen. Sadly, we don't have that crystal ball, but it's an examination of the relative impact of trade, labour and agricultural support policies, as well as the differential effects by sector size and performance of enterprises. Brexit is going to affect different sectors in different ways, and we need to understand those nuances. It examines the impacts of the potential extremes of policy rather than attempting to forecast what those policies will be, and it's aimed very much at the farm business. So apart from the four variables under consideration, we've kept everything else equal, as models do, which means that exchange rates, inflation, different differences in the macroeconomic variables, economic growth and so on, are kept stable in order for us to examine the differential effects of the four variables we wanted to look at. Those of you familiar with modelling will know the limits of econometric modelling in that it treats products as homogenous. So wheat is wheat. Actually, in reality, it's a highly fragmented market with imports and exports going on simultaneously and many of those different segments being in net import or net export. The model just treats wheat as wheat and it simplifies the picture. But we have in our technical report, which is also available on the website, undertaken sensitivity analysis so that it is possible to estimate where you may be on the spectrum. So I want to take you through the scenarios. First, evolution is probably as close to the status quo, given that we know we're not going to be part of the single market. Now, the accepted wisdom out there is there will be a certain amount of trade friction associated with no longer being in the single market, and that's between 5 and 8% of the total transaction costs, and that's made up of those additional customs checks, the paperwork, the non-tariff barriers that Amandeep referred to in her presentation. So, in our first scenario, we've looked at evolution being a free trade agreement made with the EU, but we've left agricultural support, labour costs and regulations unchanged. So that is as close to the status quo. Next, we look at unilateral liberalisation. Now, under this scenario, there is no trade deal with the EU, but the UK has decided to unilaterally lower all its agricultural tariffs to zero. In addition to this, there's a 50% reduction in agricultural support. And the way we measured that, we looked at the total overall level of support, both Pillar 1 and Pillar 2, and then we halved that total and we put the whole lot under Pillar 2 type support. We've also looked at the cost of labour. We looked at if we had shortages in the permanent labour force, and as you know, a significant number of those are made up of EU nationals, then labour costs would rise by approximately 50%. And then what the press often refer to as hard Brexit or no deal, and we've called this scenario Fortress Britain. In this, we have no deal with the EU, and we revert to WTO tariffs, the most favoured nation principle. So the common external tariff of the EU, if you like, is applied to all UK imports and exports. In this, we've assumed that there's a trade-off, that we're given a certain amount of tariff protection and therefore we'll be given even less in terms of agricultural support. So we have a 75% reduction in total agricultural support. Again, a 75% reduction from the current total, and it all goes under Pillar 2. And here, both permanent and seasonal labour costs rise. Regulatory costs are assumed under scenario two to there's a slight relaxation in our unilateral liberalisation and regulatory costs are assumed to drop by approximately 5%. So before I take you through the results by sector, I'm just going to give you a brief overview of the key point. Now, it's really important to understand that the trade impact is important in all sectors and there are winners and losers in each scenario. But in the specific scenarios that we've modelled, it's interesting to note that policy change has a greater initial impact in most sectors. The key message and the one that I really want to emphasise is that the top 25% of enterprises remain viable in every sector, regardless of size, under every scenario. So it just underlines the importance of performance in terms of resilience to Brexit. So whilst the impacts of Brexit can't be underestimated, there are also opportunities, and we will see these as we go through the sector-by-sector results. And there's plenty that businesses can do now in order to prepare, mitigate, and prepare to take advantage of opportunities. We're so keen not to allow the industry to sleepwalk into Brexit. We really want to draw this point out that there is so much. It's It's not a passive process. We don't wait until policies are imposed upon us. There is an awful lot that we can do now in order to prepare. So let me take you through the results by sector. The average cereal farm, farms under this category are predominantly wheat, barley and oilseeds. Now incomes fall slightly under scenario one as a result of that trade friction that I spoke about earlier. So the fact that we have taken a net exporting year means that it costs us more to export our products with that trade friction, and therefore there's a downward pressure, slight downward pressure on domestic prices. Okay, the impact in scenario one is relatively small and it would be reversed in the net importing year. Now we know once you start chunking up the cereal sector into different segments that that's the case for many products. The analysis on that is available in our sensitivity analysis, which is in the full technical report. But look at scenario two. Now, here we've seen levels of farm support reduced by 50%, and we've seen the tariff protection removed. And you can see this, the dramatic effect this has had in cereals, and most of that drop is driven by the reduction in direct support. Now, in scenario three, this is assumed a net exporting year and there are high tariffs, but that 75% reduction in direct support has actually driven the average farm, average cereal farm, negative. This assumes farmers do nothing. So this is the modelling work that if this scenario happened tomorrow, that is where we would be. Now, we know what a resilient and flexible bunch that farmers are. So it's very much a sort of, if you like, a static analysis in that this assumes that farmers will do nothing in response to Brexit. I want to take the cereal sector down one extra level. First is that performance is not necessarily related to size. If you look at medium and large size farms, you will find the medium farms outperform the large farms in scenarios two and three. And this is due to labour costs. The medium farms have lower labour costs. In our model, the medium farms outperform the larger farms, which is interesting. The other key point is that consistently those high-performing farms have not just a net positive income, but a very positive farm business income post-Brexit. So here, again, when we're looking at averages, we need to be aware that there's a huge variation either side of that average and that our top 25% of performers are far more resilient and less affected by that reduction in farm business income. General cropping. I wanted to include general cropping because obviously 70% of general cropping comes from cereals. It's a similar picture driven by predominantly by the reduction in farm business support. But you can see under Fortress UK that income has risen slightly. Now that's due to increased income from processed potatoes. General cropping includes not just cereals, but also whole field vegetable crops. Potatoes is one of them. And potatoes is one of the sectors that fares very well under Brexit. There's significant opportunities for import substitution, and therefore the price of the processed potatoes rises significantly and helps drive that farm business income in general cropping. With trade friction costs and the WTO tariffs, UK prices for processing potatoes will rise significantly. Now, as I said, provided the processing capacity is there, that's a huge opportunity to displace some of that imported product. So the main findings. It's fairly intuitive that we understand that where a greater percentage of farm business income comes from direct support, then those businesses will be incredibly impacted under our scenarios where we've seen a 50% and a 75% reduction in that level of support. So these sectors include cereals and beef and lamb production. Now, with regard to trade, there are both winners and losers. For sectors that are net exporters, the cost of doing business, along with the higher tariff barriers faced in some scenarios, tends to put downward pressure on prices and on farm business incomes. But for net importers, the cost of doing business helps raise domestic prices, apart from sector two in the unilateral trade liberalisation. So the cereal sector tends to fluctuate between being a net importer and a net exporter. And I would refer you to the sensitivity analysis in the technical report to examine those differential effects in different years. But the additional cost of labour coupled with the reduction in support pushes farm business income negative under scenario three. But the key message to take away is that top 25% of performers in every sector remain positive. So there's so much the individual business can do now. Wait and see is a high-risk strategy. There's plenty that businesses can do to get fit for Brexit.
As Sarah mentioned, the impact of Brexit is likely to vary between the sectors, but also in different parts of the UK. We spoke to George Laurie at the conference about the situation in Scotland.
I'm George Laurie. I'm an AHDB board member and have farming interests in the central belt of Scotland. Brexit at the present moment, it's uncertainty. We've also been protected slightly by single farm payments being guaranteed till 2022. So there's little change going on to businesses at the present moment. A constant look at costings and making sure that they're fit for purpose and that they can accommodate the changes. But other than that, it's the uncertainty that's probably getting everybody worked up. We've also got this devolved government issue that we're not sure where the negotiations will be agreed by DEFRA, and then Scottish Office have got to put these in place, or where the Scottish Office will actually be there. So that's a major concern with us at the present moment. One thing that we're limited in the crops and that we can grow, we're also limited in the, because of 85% of the land is LFA area, so we're also limited within that sector too. So Pillar 2 is very important to us, and we need to be an element of Pillar 2. That's not to say that Pillar 1 is not important as well, but you know, with the big area LFA ground in Scotland, we need to make sure that there is support for the less favoured areas. Other than that, it's just a wait and see. The documents, the Horizon documents that AHDB are producing at the present moment are good indications of where the point of travel is going. But worrying times, but maybe with some security to 2022.
What positive measures can farmers take to try and protect their businesses against that uncertainty?
They've got to make sure that they are growing for the market or producing for the market. Scotland, malting barley is a big, big important crop. So, you know, we're good at producing that market, so we've got to do that. Distilling wheat is also a major market as well. Within the beef and lamb sector, you know, we export a fair number of our lambs, so that's a big, big worry. Europe takes 55% of our lambs at the present moment, so that's a big worry that we need to get that market right. But the positives are that there's good signs on the market for wheat, there's good signs on the market for barley as well, so these are the positive signs. There's no sign in that industry declining.
As you just heard, George finished there with some thoughts on what farmers can do to help prepare for Brexit. Here's Phil Bicknell again on the same topic.
Back in the summer when we produced a Horizon report that looked at grain market prospects, we did focus on five key areas that we think are useful and relevant when it comes to farmers focusing on Brexit and starting to think about tactics and strategies to mitigate some of the challenges that Brexit, I think, is going to put their way. First thing was around improving competitiveness. So just trying to understand a bit more about your own business, particularly around cost of production and how you measure up. Bottom line for me is that actually being as competitive as you can is probably the best form of protection. Second thing, and partly and probably kind of a bit related to this, is just how do we drive productivity? And when we start talking about productivity, I know some can think about it, well, that's just saying produce more. No, that's not the case. It's trying to see how effective we are at turning inputs into outputs. So trying to look a bit at that in terms of just trying to understand a bit more about how effective we are at, you know, whether that's around the technical efficiency, whether it's about just trying to squeeze a bit more out of our farming businesses. The third thing that we highlighted on back in the summer was just trying to think about more of a supply chain approach, and I'm really conscious that farm businesses can't exist in isolation. So actually, how do we get a more collaborative approach that lets farmers amalgamate production volumes, integrate with supply chains? I think, and this isn't just cereals, but I think across the board from a farming perspective, we've been in a situation where we've probably produced something first, then worked out how to sell it. That carries a strong degree of risk. How are we producing what the market wants? That for me feels like the fundamental switch that we need to make. And it, yeah, we see aligned supply contracts in dairy sector, for instance. We're starting to see them a bit more in cereals. The fourth area we talked about was improving consistency of UK grain quality. And I suppose if we've got consistent quality, that also means that we can consistently supply hopefully higher quality markets. And the fifth and final thing was just trying to think about the potential niche opportunities and trying to look a little bit more out of the box. I suppose on the scheme of it, we're a relatively small producer of grains. Certainly when you measure up the fact of what global wheat trade last year was over 170 million tonnes, UK share of that was less than 2%. We're never going to have the scale. So therefore, actually, why are we trying to fill boats full of grain? Why aren't we trying to turn that into added value products and instead fill containers full of added value products? So for me, it's probably looking away from maybe some of the bulk commodity aspects and trying to look at actually how do we get more grain going into value added, which hopefully means more money back to the primary producer.
All of the Grain Outlook conference presentations are on the website at cereals.ahdb.org.uk/markets. I'd really recommend you have a look if you want to know more. The winter meeting season is fast approaching, in fact it's already started. Make sure you look at our Monitor Farm pages on the website to find your nearest meeting. And don't forget, our agronomist conference is in Peterborough on the 5th and 6th of December. That's all from us. I'm Judith Stafford and you've been listening to the AHDB Cereals and Oilseeds podcast. Tune in again in a month's time for the next episode. And don't forget to let us know what you think by emailing comms@ahdb.org.uk. Visit our website, cereals.ahdb.org.uk, for more information, or follow us on Twitter @ahdb_cereals.
Soundtrack files were created by Serilis, Rutgermanner, Barrel Carb, Sangtow and EdTJ via Freesound, R.W. Smith and Wright via YouTube Creator Studio, and Eleanor Holdsworth and Jason Pollen.